for you, sir. It's in a code.
The girl who follows the law comes of age an hour early tonight.
What does that mean?
In the Old Testament, Ruth follows judges. Coming of age is 21. Tonight means tonight. In other words, the Navy will simulate the blowing up of Ruth at 1 hour before 21 hours tonight.
I suppose you're one of those fellows who does the Times crossword puzzle in 10 minutes.
I have never taken 10 minutes.
Good afternoon or good evening. Take your pick from whenever you are tuning back into another movie mug. An old film that I've recently rediscovered hidden away in my collection of rotting VHS tapes in my dark, dingy, corpse-infested loft. And when I say corpse-infested, I mean, you know, insects and arachnids. And a mug of something, maybe something symbolic, maybe just for the hell of it. Now, this week's film is on another... Well, it's quite a battered box of a cassette. The cassette itself is absolutely fine, but the box was a bit ragged. And when I pulled the video from the sleeve, two corpses fell out. One was a very, very desiccated arachnid, and the other was... I have absolutely no idea what it was. It was a mess of tanglement of legs and a wing or something. You know, I'm not entirely sure, but the tape's fine, so no issues there. But... Now, I probably should have been drinking scotch with this film, realistically, in paying homage to it. But I don't like scotch. But I decided instead to go for a Jack and Coke. Ching, ching, there we go. Now, I know last week I went on quite a lot, probably a bit too long, actually, about the fact that I don't drink. Well, the fact is I don't drink beer. I don't like beer. But I don't mind the old spirit, and I don't mind the old Jack and Coke. And basically, it's a kind of a celebration of the character of this rather cracking little British film, to be fair, with an American drink. But anyway. Now, what do you get if you take James Bond, make him funny... Yeah, sure, Bond has got his quips, but he's hardly comedic, is he? Not a comedic character. Give him some eccentricities like tapestry making, loving cats, and a real hatred of women. Retain that action man sort of skills and derring do. Give him a bottle of scotch instead of a martini, shaken, not stirred. And what do you get? Well, I'll tell you what you get. You get Mr. Rufus Excalibur Fawkes. That's right. A wealthy... expert in almost anything under the sun, guy with a private army who is enlisted by the UK government to take back a couple of hijacked oil rigs from terrorists. Now, interestingly enough, like last week's Cannonball / Carquake retitling, depending on where you are, this film also has two titles, depending on where you are. Our American cousins get the titular character as the movie title, which is simply called Fawkes. But... I'm a bit of a fan of nondescript titles as such, you know, films that kind of like, well, what's that about kind of thing? but this one, Fawkes, really meant absolutely nothing. It didn't tell you anything about anything at all, other than that's the guy's name. And us Brits, we get the rather more exciting and descriptive, although it tells you everything you need to know kind of about the film, North Sea Hijack. It's a 1979 British actioner from John McLaughlin. Who also gave us the rather good The Wild Geese, actually, the previous year. He directed a lot of other films as well, a lot of westerns in his youth, and quite a lot of TV movies in his later career. But The Wild Geese is probably his most famous film, and then maybe this comes in second. But now, I mentioned James Bond at the beginning because it does actually star Mr. Roger Moore. In between Bond films, he actually made this, and he has actually gone on record as saying that he prefers this film to any of the Bond pictures that he did. And I kind of agree. He's the hero, Fawkes, whose, I guess, his genius is matched only by his acute antisocialness. You know, the fact that he hates women and loves... He prefers the company of cats to pretty much anything else. And he's always a recluse, basically. He lives in a Scottish castle, training his little private army called the Fawkes Fusiliers to absolute perfection, driving them for split-second timing on exercises. Otherwise, he will, and I quote, have their balls for breakfast. Two North Sea oil rigs named Jennifer and Ruth then are held hostage by a terrorist group. They got on board a supply boat called Esther, which is headed for the rigs, posing as reporters. Lou Kramer, played by Anthony Psycho Perkins, and his right-hand man, Shulman, played by the legendary, and I do mean legendary, Michael Parks, and if you don't know who he is, I suggest you stop this podcast now, get your ass over to watching From Dusk Till Dawn, or Planet Terror, Grindhouse, or, you know, any of those films that he was in with Tarantino Rodriguez. Kill Bill, he was in the first Kill Bill and the second Kill Bill, playing two different characters. Or just wait for Kevin Smith's upcoming Red State, and you'll know who Michael Parks is. The guy is a legend. Now, they're the main two terrorists, there's others as well, but they're the main two. And they're going to blow up these rigs, these oil rigs, if they're not paid a £25 million ransom in different currencies within a few hours, basically. The UK government, they don't really want to, you know, bow down to terrorists, as is the way. But they decide that, you know, the cost of losing these oil rigs, you know, we're talking thousands and millions of pounds, and also the fact they would lose all the oil revenue that comes from the production of those two oil rigs, outweighs the £25 million they're asking for. But they don't really want to pay it. They don't want to bow down and be seen to paying it. Enter the folks Fusiliers, who are a kind of off-the-grid task force, so to say, that are used by Lloyd's of London to do sort of retrieval work and stuff like that. They're all ex-SAS, you know, army or, you know, intelligence experts, you know. I mean, as Sean Connery quite said in the Rock, you know, that he was trained by the best British intelligence. That was a terrible accident. Terrible, terrible impression. To take back the boat, the terrorists are on, stop the threat. That's what these guys have been brought on board to do. Now, on top of that already fantastic cast, you know, you've got Moore, you've got Perkins, and you've got Parks. Also put on top of that, James, Captain Nemo himself, Mason, playing Admiral Brinson, who's a naval admiral, and he's brought in to oversee the whole operation and also to act as a kind of negotiator. He's part of the way in which folks is going to get on board and deal with these guys. And basically he's working alongside folks, like I said. Most of the rest of the cast are largely unknown, pretty much, you know. They're mostly the guys that are being held on the boat, the supply ship. And there's kind of like a bit of a subplot going on where they attempt to poison the terrorists, because obviously, you know, they probably end up all dying. And I think that the boat itself is all rigged, so if anything goes wrong, they all go up. So they want to make a bid for their own freedom as such. Now, Roger Moore in this is fantastic. He's sporting a rather uncharacteristic beard, but he's very, very funny. It's the funniest character he's ever played, but it's funny in the fact that but his character has no sense of humour. He has no sense of humour. That's what's funny about it. It always helps that he's given some great lines, as well as those ones at the beginning of the podcast. He's given some truly great lines as comebacks for the people throughout the film. In my opinion, it's his best on-screen work. And it's a real shame that we didn't get any more adventures of Rufus Excalibur, folks. Instead, he continues to kind of like churn out Bond films that just keeps, you know, just dropped in quality after each successive outing. I think after this, he probably did about another four or five Bond films. And, you know, it just got worse and worse and worse, really. The film was actually based on a book as well, came out at the same time, called Ruth, Jennifer, and Esther, or Esther, Jennifer, Ruth, or whatever the three were. I can't remember how it was actually made up. But I couldn't find any reference to the writer Jack Davis, quite a respected screenwriter who wrote the novel and the screenplay for the film, writing any more adventures for him, which I think is a damn shame, because he's a really, really good character. Anthony Perkins, pretty much the same as in any other film that I've seen him in. Quite delightfully mad. You know, you see him sleeping upright with his gun in his hand, he wants to keep an eye on everything. He has the odd rant at people, you know, very, very cold and calculating character. It just comes across as phoning it in for me, as if he's like, you know, just turns up and just does it. You never really feel anything from him. And I kind of feel that in every Perkins role, you know, that he's ever played, right the way back to Psycho. Now, one of my favourite films that he was in was The Black Hole, and he's almost an exact character in that. You know, he had the kind of mad, sort of genius kind of aspect to it, or Moody Git, I call it, you know what I mean? Bit of a one-note actor for me, which is a real shame, because, you know, he was very well respected. But Michael Parks, almost unrecognisable in this to begin with. I didn't, when I saw this when I was a kid, you know, so I haven't seen this film for a long, long time. So I should have mentioned that, you know, I first saw this film on video back in the, you know, sort of early 80s, mid 80s, you know, again, another film that my dad had gotten hold of, however he'd gotten hold of it, and we'd seen it, but again, it's been hidden away. I haven't seen it in probably, I don't know, 20 years since I've seen this film. So I didn't know who Michael Parks was back then, and I barely recognised him when he came on the screen, because he's got these really, really bad glasses on that kind of like make his eyes look like a goldfish bowl, you know, really, really magnify his eyes up. And he isn't really given much to get his teeth into this, you know, it's quite a minor role. Certainly not like the roles that he has become most famous for now. And there's apparently also an alleged homoerotic nature to the Perkins and Parks characters, which was apparently allegedly written in at Perkins' behest. Now, I'm not entirely sure. I'll probably need to watch it again to see that. If it is there, it's very, very subtle, if it's true at all. I'm not entirely sure it's there or not, but I read that after watching it again, so I probably need to watch it again, which I will do. And so it's basically a predecessor to films like Die Hard and Under Siege and, you know, and films like that, you know, that have come along in the last sort of 20 years since this. And this is kind of like the sort of spearhead in that as such. And it's it doesn't really have the gung-ho, devil-may-care attitude of its American cousins as such. You know, his style is a bit more stoic and reserved and British stiff upper lipness, you know, from folks in his fusiliers. A bit more, hey, chaps, hoi, hoi, hoi. The terrorists are armed with guns and, you know, and whatever. And folks' guys use stealth, silent spear guns and good old ass kickery. I mean, that's part of the reason for the fact that where they are, when they do eventually storm the boat in the finale, not really giving anything away there, you know they're going to do it at some point, that they do it all in a kind of Sam Fisher kind of way, you know, all in wetsuits and goggles and whatever. But it's also the final assault is it's over too quickly, really. You know, it really does zip past. I mean, I guess it's pretty much more true to life than, you know, sort of most movie sort of style things, but I was just sort of demanding a bit more, and I think that a modern day audience would demand a bit more from, you know, the end sort of like battle as such. However, that does bode very, very well for a remake, of which I believe this is really, really ripe fodder. Bring it bang up to date, you know, really work on that Sam Fisher-esque kind of aspect to the final assault, you know, with the night vision and the creeping up and the breaking people's necks from behind and stuff like that, which it alludes to, but doesn't really, you know, it all goes by pretty too fast. And I think because of that, the movie kind of lacks any real credible tension, for me anyway, you know. It's probably also the fact that the British lens, I think, of that era was altogether less threatening than, say, the American ones, certainly at that time anyway. But it doesn't detract from what is a very enjoyable film. It's got a good rewatch factor, so I'm not seen this film in probably 20 years, and I really enjoyed watching it again today. It's a kind of a lazy Sunday afternoon, you know, sort of film of that variety, a bit like Bond, really, when you think about it. I mean, you know, there's a reason why, you know, sort of public holidays and Christmas and bank holidays and stuff like that were kind of synonymous with the fact that, you know, what's the Bond film on? You know, you always, when I was growing up in the 80s, throughout the 80s and maybe even the early 90s, it was always, oh, Christmas Day, what's the Bond film on? Bank holiday Sunday, what's the Bond film on? And there always was a Bond film on. You don't really get it anymore these days with, you know, multi-channel, multi-threaded media, but you know, back then it was all about, you know, two or three channels on your TV, and what was going to be the big film that everyone was going to sit around watching. It was usually a Bond film, and this kind of fits into that kind of aspect of it. It is very Bondish, only better, in my opinion. Of certainly its era. Key scenes to watch out for. For me, one of my favourites is the fact that when folks, Moore's character, must storm the supply ship, again, you know, named Esther, unbeknownst to his team, something goes wrong with the plan. He's very much about plans and setting it all up and knowing what people are going to do. And it's kind of a theme throughout the whole film that it kind of goes awry a little bit, and he then has to get back on board the ship. The only wetsuit that the oil rig that he was on is a bright red orange one, or vermilion, which is hardly stealth, is it? You know, and added to that, when he gets on board the ship, everyone's taking out people, and he gets attacked by one of his own people, thinking that he's one of the terrorists. Folks and him have a bit of a struggle. He's got no time to try and explain things, and every second counts. He's on the clock. It's, again, that's a theme throughout the film, is that time is of the essence. They keep mentioning it over and over again about certain things can happen at certain times. So he's forced to throw him overboard. Folks throws his teammate overboard without actually him knowing about it. And the funny part about it is, a few scenes later, he calls out, "Where's Harris?" Because he was supposed to do something at a certain point, and one of his guys in a cockney voice says, "Somebody threw him overboard." I mean, classic, you know, really, really good. Like I said, this is ripe remake territory for me. I think that somebody like Tony Scott would lap this shit up. He really would. Give it some whiz-bang editing, fancy camera work, you know. I mean, again, it's the one thing that's kind of missing from this. I mentioned it last 2 weeks ago with Juggernaut, you know, is that it's a cracking story, a cracking idea, but, you know, you can do a lot more with it these days, you know, with sort of like dollies and zooms and helicopter work, which he could have really done then, but it didn't, you know, probably budgetary restraints. But, you know, he could probably do a lot with this kind of material. And hey, why not throw Denzel Washington in as the genius recluse? Well, he probably couldn't call him Rufus Excalibur, folks, but, you know, you can get around that, come on, saying. But, you know, he's called on by his country to disarm some terrorists or something like that. I mean, I could see that. I could see Tony Scott with Denzel Washington really getting behind this and making this, an even better film than it already is. Now, before I wrap it up, somebody messaged me on Twitter asking why I only talk about films I like. Well, okay, number one, firstly, all these films, I've got them. They're all on VHS. I haven't rented them, and not off Netflix. I haven't downloaded them or like that. You know, they're all sitting here on my tape. So I wouldn't keep films that I hated, would I? You know, I mean, if I didn't like it, I would never have kept it or never recorded it off TV. So the point of this is really that I'm recapping forgotten films, looking at them, and then considering, you know, a digital upgrade. So it's probably mostly going to be films that I do like or have liked, which brings me to point number two. They haven't all stood the test of time, as was proved today. I'm actually doing two shows back to back, although the second one won't air until next week. I'm going to pre-record it. I watched two films. They were on the same tape. I wasn't going to watch them both. I started watching North Sea Hijack, and then this other one came on. I knew it was on there because it was on the label. And I was like, oh, I'll watch this as well. So I'm going to do a show of that one as well, but that's not going to be up until next week. But this is a film which, as a kid, I adored this film. Absolutely adored it. It was one of my favourites. I've just finished watching it, and it stunk the room up. It really did. So stay tuned. I've got a stinker coming up for you. Folks, or North Sea Hijack for the Brits listening. Cracking little film. A must watch, in my opinion, from 1979. I have now found it on play.com. £4. I've ordered it already, so I am getting digital upgrade of this. I guess I should be saying whether or not I'm going to get the digital upgrade. All of the films that I've mentioned so far, this is number 10, I have either purchased on iTunes or I have ordered the DVD from. I want all of these films in my digital vault as such. And that's this week's Movie Mug.